Welcome to Catalytic Curiosity. I am your host, James with a Y O'Farron, with Catalytic Conversations. I serve remote professionals and hybrid organizations with coaching, consulting, and training to help them reconcile humanity and technology, leading to healthier, digitally integrated lives and teams. On this podcast, I am embarking on a journey of discovery to unearth the roots of digital mastery and maturity beyond mere adulting. I interview insightful and intriguing experts, exploring how we can develop sage-like maturity with intention in today's digitized world. Today's episode brings Kel Delaney to the table to talk about designing conversational experiences. I met Kel initially in connection with him through his work with Conversant, which is one of my favorite companies. He wrote two of my favorite books, both The Communication Catalyst and The Vitality Imperative. So I've been super excited to have him on this episode. During our conversation, we discussed some of the benefits of digital conversations and how in-person engagement can learn from them, as well as vice versa. We also talk about the importance of responding rather than reacting to changes and how we need to pause and think about the best way to be intentional and craft the experience of conversations wherever we have them. I look forward to joining with you in our conversation today. Well, welcome everyone to Catalytic Curiosity. With me today, I'm really excited to have here, recording on St. Paddy's Day, Kel Delaney, a fellow Irishman. We talked a while back. I reached out to him because he works for Conversant, which is the company that sponsored the creation of The Communication Catalyst and The Vitality Imperative, which are two of my favorite books in the world about communication and connection in communities. So I'm really super glad to have him on here to talk about what he does and some of what his experience has been about creating communities online in hybrid environments and things like that. So Kel, tell me a bit about you, what you do. You describe yourself as an experience designer on your LinkedIn. What does that mean to you? And a bit about yourself.
Well, thanks, James. First off, thank you so much for having me. Happy St. Patrick's Day, as we've already discussed. It's a pleasure to be here. What do I do? So I work for a company, as you mentioned, called Conversant. And as you could imagine with that word, Conversant, conversation, we really think the heart of everything that humans do is conversation. If you actually sit back for a moment and think about what percentage of my day at work am I in some sort of conversation that could be text, email, phone, video call, person, like voice to voice or in-person conversation? What percentage? Most of our clients, most of the people I talk to, that's 80, 90% of your day in your work. Yet we don't often think to do anything about that or to improve the conversations we have together, the relationships, when that is the foundation of everything we're doing together. So that's really the fundamentals of the organization I work for, what we're doing. We're looking at relationship, we're looking at conversation, we're looking at team, we're looking at our relationship with ourselves. So coaching, and where do you get in your own way? Where are you trying to offer more, but not realizing you're short-circuiting that based on how you're showing up? And you don't even see that.
Coaching there, actually.
Our vision, you know, we redid our vision over the past couple of years. COVID became an opportunity partially for us to really revisit who are we as an organization, who do we want to be and need to be for the future. And our vision is we awaken the world to the power and joy of authentic human connection, setting a new standard for leadership that produces meaningful, enduring impact. And so it's really about
one more time, just for emphasis.
Yep. We awaken the world to the power and joy of authentic human connection, setting a new standard for leadership that produces meaningful, enduring impact.
I love that. That's beautiful.
For me, the what I love most about it is that the joy, power and joy of authentic human connection. And that's the fundamentals. If you think about, most of us don't show up at work every day. We don't wake up not wanting to contribute. We actually do want to contribute. And so my job, the way I think about it is, how can I help every individual and every team in every organization contribute more of who they are and more of what they deep down inside really would love to give to the world, to the people around them, to their work. And there are many ways to do that. The experience design, I deliberately have that in my title because I've always loved this idea of so much of how we show up, the conversations we have, the relationships we have is also dictated by the design around us, whether it's our space. And we'll talk a little bit about this in a minute, but like whether it's virtual or in person or hybrid or outside or a walking meeting or sitting around a table or dinner, they all have a different experience and cause a different type of connection and different type of conversation.
Because our thoughts are so much shaped by our environment. We don't think in isolation from our environment. We think in context of the place we're in, the people we're in, and just also the social context, the wider things that are happening in the world shape the flow of our thoughts and our identity so much. I like to use an example with people. It's like when you walk through a door and you forget what you went through the room for. That's actually a feature, not a bug. It's you killing your RAM, right? To help you refresh your memory in a sense. And if you walk back to the door, you'll remember it. And people who memorize things professionally use rooms in their mind to classify how they remember things, because that's how our brains operate, is we think with the room and the space that we're in. And so being able to design our spaces so that we can deliberately be intentional about our thoughts and our identities is so important.
Yeah, very, very much so. And, you know, not only does it affect us, but we can affect it. Yes. I don't know if you're familiar, but the Stanford Design School, for my understanding of the story, is for a number of years, they didn't really have a set space or a room. And so they were constantly, the university moved them around. Well, they took advantage of that as an opportunity to experiment with what could a mobile space be? What would mobile design look like? How do our conversations and our work and our work together, how does it change based on the different rooms we're in, the way we set that room and the space up? Where are we more creative? Where can we execute and focus better? And so much of their work, they have a really great book about this, came from all those experiments. Fantastic. And they started to figure out that by changing the environment and changing up in different ways, in different orientations, they changed the entire way they innovated and the way they work together. And so that sort of laid the foundation for all that. But to me, that was inspiration for me, even in like when I would design, when we were doing more in-person work 3 years ago, how do you set up a room when you're about to work with a group of people together where you've all flown maybe into a hotel conference room?
Right.
And so that it's more than just a hotel conference room.
Which brings me to, when you're discussing this earlier, you brought up a quote by Viktor Frankl that between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And I really love that quote. It puts the responsibility on us to not just operate by default, but to choose and be intentional about how we engage with things. And you brought up in context of the suddenness of being thrown into a digital world at the beginning of COVID and some of the ramifications that came after that. So could you explore a bit of that from your experience and your observation of how people reacted to that and then how that's changed since then?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, with COVID, we didn't have much time to plan to see it as, we didn't see it as like, oh, here is an opportunity to take a moment to sit back and figure out how could we take advantage of this. Right. Most of us went immediately to, it's only going to last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, well, I hope it only lasts two more weeks. And then next thing you know, it's 2 years later, right? And we figured it out. That was much more, you know, next to that quote, I like this, the difference between reacting and responding.
Yes.
We reacted to COVID out of necessity. Right. But what I love about that quote is it says, we do have the ability to stop, pause for a moment, and think through what we want our response to be, how we want to respond or how we want to be or how we want to show up. And when I think about all the lessons we've learned over the past 2 years, I guarantee most people, if you stop and think back, most people resisted. They're like, we cannot do our work virtually. I worked with a lot of organizations pre-COVID that would come to me and say, hey, could you help my team learn to work virtually? And within a few weeks, maybe a month or two, every single one of them reached that point of discomfort around changing their skills and their habits and their work behaviors. And suddenly the story would emerge that, oh, we just can't do our work this way. It just doesn't work. That wasn't necessarily accurate. It was uncomfortable, and people then found a way to get rid of the discomfort by going back to like, well, no, we have to do our work. This is the way we've always done it.
Right.
COVID, though, sort of forced the issue and made it, I think, proved to a lot of people that it was a bit of a transition, but no, you can find ways, we can be creative and figure out how to do a lot of what we have to do, not everything, virtually and in this new world. So here we are two years later, and a lot of people who originally resisted are not wanting to go back to an office. They're like, I like this new way of working. I like being home. I like not commuting, whatever it might be. And yet we're moving back to a hybrid world for a lot of people. And I know everyone is in a different scenario, but this is where we can react again or we can respond.
Right.
So we can either just ride the wave into a new hybrid world or whatever's coming in the next year or more, or we can actually be intentional. This is where the conversational design, the experiential designer in me, that's what I love about this. You can take the time with your team or your organization or, you know, even yourself and think through, what have we learned? Who do we want to be? How do we work? What do we love about being in person? And where do we find that that is the most productive way to do certain aspects of our work? What have we learned doing stuff virtually? And we found that, you know what? We're better at doing this, this, and this when it's done virtually. Or we figured out how to include people in ways that we couldn't in person. If we then sit back and look at our work, look at everything we've learned, many people I think might be familiar with a start, stop, continue type assessment where you, everyone gets together and says, well, what do we want to start doing? What do we want to stop doing? What do we want to continue? You could do that for all aspects. So, but there are a lot of meetings people used to have in person that you do not want to go back to. A lot of ways that things happen in person that you're like, oh, you're dreading it. Well, here's the opportunity to together agree, we're not going to go back to that. We're going to design our hybrid work. We're going to design our in-person work based on the absolute best that we know from in-person, from virtual, from hybrid. And so that to me is where we have the opportunity to respond. But it takes a moment. You have to have that space that Viktor Frankl talks about. You have to take the space to come together and be intentional about it. So that when you then are acting together and you're in the middle of all the work and it's just happening to you, you have something to come back to and to act off of, to say, all right, we talked about this. This is what we're now doing together.
We chose this new path together.
Exactly.
And I've heard, you mentioned like there's a lot of people who are, you know, not wanting to go back to office. They're like, we like these different aspects of being virtual. I've seen like a divide between the workers and the managers and the upper leadership. I saw a statistic that like 93% or so beginning of COVID were saying, yeah, we're going to go on virtual. And then 2021, it was like 82%. So yeah, we're going to stay virtual. And then now it's only like 51% are saying, yeah, we're going to stay virtual. And of course, all of the people working going, no, we all want to stay virtual. We want to have a hybrid option. We want that flexibility, but there's like a increasing pushback from the upper leadership. Do you feel that that might be related to that discomfort that you mentioned earlier on, that they're finding that their skills of leadership and having these conversations with their workers are not up to snuff in a sense for managing the tensions, the new, you know, field that they're working with now, and they're just reacting against that and wanting to go back to something that's more comfortable, that they have more control in a sense? Or what do you feel?
I think it's a wide range of explanations that people have for a lot of different reasons. I think it's very personal by the individual, by organization, by role, by the type of work. I do think there's an element of discomfort. I think it comes from different sources as well. But the thing I always come back to is, I think there's an assumption behind the whatever choices people are making, especially about coming back to the office, that it's going to be there's an assumption about what it's going to be like. And it's not true. There is no such thing as going back to the way it used to be.
Right.
We have permanently changed. Everyone has.
Yeah.
So I've been in person a number of times. It's so different than what it used to be. It takes a lot more time. We're used to a rhythm of work that you can plan your week and get a certain amount done that being in person, once again, like I said, has benefits. And if you plan for that, it can be really powerful. But you cannot plan a similar schedule to your virtual day in person. There's a lot more transition time between meetings. There's a lot more hanging out in the hallways, talking that is really productive. And as we all know, in human relationship and connecting senses, but it isn't, you cannot think about that as time that I could sit down and work on a contract or work on a Excel spreadsheet or whatever you happen to be working on. So I think this is where, you know, one thing that Conversant teaches is this purpose, method, result sequence. So all work has a why, a purpose, and it has the method that you execute off it, and then you get a result. The interesting thing is most arguments or disagreements happen if you actually stop for a moment and say, all right, we're spinning here, we're in an argument. It's almost always about method.
Yeah, I was going to predict that.
And even the example you just gave is about method. It's about back to the office. It's about virtual, different methods for doing our work together, right?
Right.
But the way to resolve that is the instant you know there's an argument about method, you step back and go, okay, what's our purpose together? What's our outcomes, or like, what are our results that we're trying to accomplish? Then you look at, well, what are all the different methods that can connect the dots between the purpose and the method and the outcomes? And then you figure, okay, out of the methods, which one or ones, several, are we going to choose to use to best connect the dots between
and invest into those,
serving our purpose and creating our results? Now, there are also bigger questions and there are bigger needs. So like, there are senior leaders in an organization, sometimes just have to make a choice. You're not going to make everyone happy. And part of this is people need to also reckon with, is this the right place for me? Sometimes the discomfort is, I don't like the choices the senior leaders are making.
Right.
And it doesn't feel right for me.
There's a misalignment.
And instead of people just stepping back and considering, is this right for me? Do I need to look for something else? Mm-hmm. They continue to push back and continue to have these arguments instead of acknowledging that, no, at the end of the day, someone needs to make the final call on how it's going to be.
Right. Right.
Whether you agree with it or not, and whether that turns out to be the right method or not, is not really the point. but those conversations aren't necessarily happening as transparently.
Right.
And, you know, how you lead, how you make these decisions is your culture. A lot of people bring up that, well, it's important for us to be in person for our culture. Well, part of this too is, I mean, I could argue that from different angles, but part of what people are missing is the way you're making the decision about how you're going to be in person or when you're going to be in person is your culture.
Yes.
It's already an example of your culture, right? The way you are showing up, the way you're leading, the way you're making decisions together, that is your culture already.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very complicated. I think it's very individual. And to me, the most important thing is, once again, to really, can you take the time again, instead of just react, to pause, look at, what is the bigger picture purposes we're serving together? What is most important for the business, our community, who we're trying to be together, and the results? And then look at all the different possible methods, and can we be as creative as possible to come up with something that maybe no one ever thought of before that works even better than anything any of us had ever expected?
Yeah.
I think COVID showed that there were ways that virtual could serve us even better than we were ever able to before. But then we also are missing some things when it comes to being together.
Absolutely. I would love to look, expand on that a little bit closer and look at some of the specific examples, for example. So like, what are some particular ones that you've seen, as is obviously very individual to particular companies and individuals and so on. But what are some patterns that you've seen of some examples of things that do work better online or other ones that work better in person, and how those can be brought into play together in a hybrid or setup that integrates the best of both worlds? What are some examples that you've seen of that?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to virtual accessibility or equity and inclusion is one of the biggest benefits. You're all the same size little square on the screen, right? You can involve. I mean, I was working with an organization over through COVID that's global, and they were connecting people. And up to that point, any call I'd done before COVID, every call I'd done with them, even though they would use Zoom or they would use a video conferencing solution, they only ever used it for the audio. No one turned their video on. And I was always baffled by that. But
yeah,
I sort of understood, because that's more how it was pre-COVID. People were used to more like conference calls.
Right.
But during COVID, they realized we have some major business strategies that need to be moved forward, and we can't just not execute on it over the next couple of years or next year or whatever. But they suddenly found through Zoom and the way we would design these meetings with them, that people from all over the world were connecting to each other, people in similar roles who knew each other's names, maybe even had emailed, but had never had the time for a conversation. Suddenly it was possible. They were in the same thing together. And although we'd originally planned to do a lot of in-person sessions around the world with them, in retrospect, I think we all agree it was better virtually, because it leveled the playing field. It involved everyone. The CEO of the company even showed up to a couple of these, the president of the company. And, you know, we would have 50, 60 people on the screen, and he would just show up and hang out. And half the time people didn't even notice he was there. So they were showing up totally authentically. And so there wasn't that dynamic where that's very different if you're in person together and the CEO or president walks into the room.
Right.
And it was wonderful, because he loved being able to hear and see how people were participating, everything that they had to give, the passion they had for this organization that they were part of. He loved it. And I think it really transformed a lot of how he thought about the people in the organization. So anyway, so I think the ability to involve and connect people across time zones and the globe, the ability to involve voices, different voices, different perspectives that you just couldn't afford to fly all to the same spot, to involve different people at different levels in an organization that, once again, you could not always afford to bring in to the same place together. You couldn't make a great business case previously because of the cost of travel.
Right.
Now you can. The fact that you can randomly split people into breakouts and have them in these small conversations and then bring them back into plenary or even to slightly smaller breakouts, that it's bound into this, that you, there's this structure to it, the ability to capture stuff through like Mural or Miro, all of that is now enabled virtually. And then the ability to better manage louder voices and quieter voices. One thing I found that I love, that I feel really works well, is using the chat. I know some people don't like it, but if you use it well and you design it well, I think you can, in parallel, get people with quieter voices contributing in ways that is very hard in person.
I've that's one of the things in Toastmasters I strongly, repeatedly advocate, is heavy use of chat during presentations and meetings. And I've gotten pushback from it from people, because I feel like it's distracting from the person who's talking at any given point, or it's passing notes in class type of thing. And I keep reminding, like, no. What it's actually like is taking notes during a lecture.
Right.
It helps you think better, but you're also suddenly doing it collaboratively, and you are engaging and you become a participant rather than a guest or just a simple attendee. You're now a participant in what's going on, and you get engaged in the communal. You're part of the conversation all of a sudden, and you're able to bounce ideas off of each other and actually understand and capture what's happening more personally than you could otherwise.
Yep.
It's tremendously powerful.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, there's something on online, I think people know it. It's called Mad Hatter Chat. I call it Mad Chatter, where, you know, there are different ways. This is, once again, the experience design. So you can design, one of my favorite things to do is to make sure people have a moment to reflect before I send them to breakouts or before I ask them to share. Because most often we think we're clear on what we're already thinking, but we're not. You take the moment to actually write down your personal answers to a couple of questions, you'd be amazed how much comes out that you're like, oh yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. Then you go into a breakout, or you go into a conversation with people, and now you have something concrete to smash up against their ideas, instead of the groupthink that tends to happen based on more powerful voices. It's much less likely to happen. So suddenly you have a design, which this connects it in person. I think these types of lessons can be brought into in person as well. So we can take the time to reflect before we share in person, before we go to breakouts.
The mad chat. Friendly for an introvert.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing is, the mad chatter, for example, is where instead of just putting in chat, I'll put a question and have everyone enter their answer, but don't press enter until I say go.
Yes.
Then they all do it at the same time and it's the same thing now.
Floods in. Yep.
Right. Unadulterated is really exciting because you get so much stuff and everyone takes a few minutes to read through and super curious about it.
But they're not like equity. You get a lot of people who are like, instead of it's like, oh, somebody else said the same thing I was going to say, so they don't say it, right? Or they're like, oh, he said that. I don't want to disagree with that person, so I'm not going to put this idea. So there's self-editing from what other people are saying if you're doing it live. But if everybody types it in there first and then everybody hits enter at once, it's unvarnished, it's unedited, uncensored, and you get to see the actual authentic pulse of the thought of the whole group. And it's really beautiful.
Exactly. And then, similarly with, reflect, one thing I like to do is this reflect first. And then especially when I want to get a lot of voices in, put people in pairs. Because often you'll get maybe a quieter person with someone else who loves their idea and then they become more of an advocate, or it gives them more confidence because that person responds so well to their idea. Then you put those pairs in groups of four. And now they're sharing with each other like, oh, we were just talking, this quieter person had this idea and this louder person, so ideas build and grow off each other in ways that I've learned because I was playing around with this virtually. It's far more powerful than just putting people together and hoping for the best. And this is where, to me, in-person can duplicate a lot of this.
Yeah, it's hard to do logistically in person, but doable. It's not as easy as just hitting a button for breakout rooms. It's automatically assigned. You have to pull off everybody in their little chairs and go off in separate rooms. You kind of hear the background conversation with other people and you have to focus on it. So it's a bit harder, but if people are already familiar with it from Zoom, they know what to do in a sense. And they're already trained in that way. And you can say, okay, pretend you're in a breakout room. You go stand over there in the corner.
Exactly. Well, it's funny you say that, because this past fall I was with a group in person. And it was so frustrating. I couldn't just close breakout rooms. I had them in breakouts and then they would not stop talking. So I literally was running around the room, just yelling, close breakout rooms, just as a joke. And everyone laughed because we all know that experience. And I do appreciate that as a facilitator. But to answer the second part of your question, which is what's the benefit of in-person?
Yes.
One way we think about it, the founder of Conversant wrote this article years ago he called it the 5-cent solution.
Yes.
So the more complex the conversation, the more senses you want to engage. Mm-hmm. So, hey, we're going to meet at this restaurant at 7 p.m. tonight, perfectly suitable for a text. A complicated emotional breakup over text, probably not a good idea. It's also
very
the reason
bad idea.
Why, right. It's also the reason why, more complex negotiations take place over a meal, because now you're engaging a lot of senses.
Didn't he use the example of the Friday Peace Accords in Northern Ireland as an example in that article, if I remember right?
No, I don't remember that.
Because he pulled, it was really touching for me, because it was the same article that I'm thinking of. He talked about how the U.S. envoy who was managing the negotiations between the Civil War fighting parties, before the weekend, before the negotiations, he had everybody live in the same place and eat every meal together, but they could not talk about the politics. So they sit across from their enemies, people that they're at war with, and have to have a meal together, and they can't talk about the thing that they're conflicting over. And over the course of that weekend, they gradually started connecting over family and things that made them more human to each other, and over these meals together that they were required to attend with each other. And people have analyzed it afterwards, and evidently that they can attribute the success of the Friday Peace Accords, ending this almost completely insuperable, unresolvable challenge of high conflict, high stakes, high emotional tension, to those meals in that resort or whatever where he had them, because they had engaged with each other's humanity over food. It's a powerful story.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's, that's the point. We do deeply connect, I think, even better in person, the most deeply when we can
more bandwidth.
Right. Yeah, it's like high definition, you know, the more senses you have involved, if you're having a meal together, if you're just physically together. One thing, you know, I'll do walking meetings right now on the phone, but walking meetings in person were always one of my favorites because there's something that psychologically happens when we are side by side instead of facing each other. And then walking stimulates the creative, innovative, connecting parts of our brains.
Yes.
So
It makes it
when
more
we're
memorable too, for memorization.
right. So, you know, I think there are a lot of really rich, beautiful benefits to being in person. I don't think anyone would deny that. But I don't think we need to be in person just to be in person. You know, being physically together to sit side by side in separate offices all day long doesn't make a lot of sense necessarily.
That's not actually where the value of being in person is,
No,
actually.
no. And I think that's what a lot of people are resisting. It's like, yeah, if I'm going to go be in person for the meeting, you know, for the connection and for what that value might contribute to the work we're doing together, great. But if it's we're just going to spend a long commute to sit in silence side by side for 8 hours and then do another commute again, what, you know, what's
Reasons.
the point?
Right, exactly. I love that. So are there any other thoughts that you have that from your experience that you've discovered that has helped create a hybrid synthesis between these two sides, these two benefits, when you have an organization that some maybe some parts of its employees are remote, scattered around the world maybe, and other parts of them who are on site, who have a higher, they have that larger bandwidth, and that creates kind of a I describe it as almost like a class system because you have these people who have a higher relational integrity by default because they're existing with that common higher bandwidth. And there's a natural othering of people who are working remotely. What have you seen that has helped bridge that gap and create a stronger synergy culturally?
I think so. It takes a lot more intention when you're going to have mixed groups. You know, historically, I think the way we did this at Conversant, and the way I often used to recommend it was if anyone's virtual, everyone should be. So we used to split off into separate rooms and all call into a meeting, even though there was a group of us who were
I
physically
love
together.
that.
And that just made it so everyone was equally present to everybody because we
Expresses
can't
a sense
really
of
help
humility.
ourselves, right? And it was in service of human connection and
Yes.
truly involving everyone equally. I would still encourage that. I do think it is possible the way the technologies have evolved to do a mix, especially given I think there's a higher volume of people who might be virtual. So if there's like a good group of people who are virtual and then a group in person, but I think you need separate facilitators. So you need one
Yes.
person constantly paying attention to the virtual people and connecting who's in person and connecting them in.
Advocating for them.
And vice versa, right?
Yeah,
And someone else
heartily
who's paying
agree.
it, so that you have facilitators who are dedicated to ensuring everyone's paying attention to everybody. Because otherwise, you have to have something to counteract their natural biology.
It reminds me of in Toastmasters in several of the clubs that I'm a part of, I advocated for including a chat master. So you have the Toastmaster who's organizing the flow of the meeting and so on. And you have the Zoom master who's keeping track of the technical aspects. You have a dedicated chat master, someone who's watching the chat and who can actively engage in it, encourage people to participate in it, to draw and ask questions there, to direct the flow of the conversation so that it's contributing and not distracting from the presentations like I talked about. But then also when there's a Q&A, some people may raise their hand and might want to pitch in verbally. Other people want to put their question in the chat. And so the chat master advocates for the people who only want to interact with the chat and give them a voice. And in a similar way, in a hybrid context, you have someone who's working online to be an advocate and bring that voice of those people who otherwise could be easily ignored and bring them and voice them for the people in person and vice versa. Same idea.
I love that with the chat. I hadn't even thought about that. It's such a great idea to even have a couple people who are just designated. Like that's your job. So it's not personal. It's not like you're interrupting. You're just like representing other people's contributions.
Yes. Which goes back to the diversity that you brought up earlier about using the virtual to create a voice for people who don't otherwise have voices.
Well, and I think what I love about that example is I think it's only limited by our creativity. Now, if you live in the story that oh, it's just not as good. Well, then that's what you're going to get. But if you live in a story that it's only limited by our current ability to be creative with the constraints that we're faced with. Well, now some new possibilities come up. I'm like, that's a new one to me. I love it. And I like the idea of even just doing that in some of the virtual spaces sure. that I'm still in. because I really think, you know, I've played around with Microsoft Teams. You can just start a video call and everyone in the organization knows if I'm online, they can see that I'm on. And I'll usually send a little message that pings everyone just saying, hey, I'm going to be doing checking email in the background in this room, this virtual room for the next hour. If you're free, pop in and say hi. And every time I've ever done that,
open door.
Several people show up. I think we can do that in when we're in person as well. Set up a conference room or in a hallway, have a video monitor with a camera that you just open a Zoom link. And anyone virtual knows that link and can just click into it and pop in to see who's walking through the hallway or who's in that room at that moment and or get a view into the office. Right. And to see the people working around in the space. And so if they do that, suddenly people are going to like, oh, hey, how's it going? And, you know, now they walk over there and they talk to you. And so I feel like there are, you can be creative like that to counteract some of just the split that can happen if it's just left to its own devices.
I love that idea. That kind of brings in some of the, like you mentioned earlier about there's time that gets used in transition between places, between scheduled blocks of productivity in person, of walking through hallways and things like that, that is actually productive because you have these natural organic interactions and conversations that spark up. That's really hard to simulate in a virtual environment, but that's a really cool way that uniquely to hybrid, you can actually do something like that. That's really right. Super cool.
Well, the one thing I'll say to that too is one of, you know, my interpretation of the research and what sort of led to the whole open office thing over the years was sort of a misinterpretation of how it actually worked. And from my understanding, it was these government labs that people were just put in rooms, scientists, and they were down these long hallways. And so they inevitably, and then common area. And so they had to walk these long hallways to like even get to the kitchen or whatever. And so they inevitably ran into each other in the hallway. And got, you know, that's where they met people and they would talk about different things. But where it went awry is people interpreted that as, oh, if we mix people up more, they'll be more productive. What they missed was those people then went back to their personal office, shut their door, and were able to focus. And right. open office spaces actually increase our stress, our cortisol.
Right.
In most people, it makes us shut down. It causes people to put their headphones on and disconnect from the space to try to like get separation and feel some sort of ability to focus. And so for me, I think what a lot of people have found at home is this ability to like, even if you only log off for 5 minutes, you're alone. You're in a space without your coworkers who just had this meeting with you sitting around now talking to you. Right. You have an ability to like disconnect or you can find ways to focus.
Yeah.
That is the missing element. You need the mixing people and then the ability to go back and focus
for sure.
on your own and do the deep thinking and deep work.
As an ambivert, someone who's both has equal balance of introversion and extroversion, I have to be very careful personally and very self-aware of how much peopling I'm doing and how much solitude I have and keep those balanced against each other. And there's times where, you know, I go a week that's just solid back-to-back meetings all week long, and I am tanked by the end of the week, and I need to go hide. As a natural extrovert in many ways, I have to go hide and kind of recuperate in a sense. But if I go too much solitude, don't mean interact with people for too long, it wears me out, and I need to go talk with people. So having that balance is super important. So I'm really sensitive to when I'm seeing people. I think that's true of everybody. Introverts need people. Everybody needs people, and extroverts need quiet time as well. Not as much as introverts do, but they all as humans need this. Right. And so being able to have those spaces for both those kinds of engagement and disengagement is really important. One thing I've liked with certain open offices that I've seen where they have, you know, cubby rooms for conference rooms and whatnot, but it's not just like, you don't have to have like a scheduled conference room. You can just go, if you just want some time out, just grab your computer and head off into the closet effectively. The space is there open for you. No judgment. Go hide. I'm like, yes, thank you so much. That is so important.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this is, you know, once again, coming back to that self-awareness and the stimulus versus and response.
Yeah.
So are you just in a reactive space in your work, whether it's at home? I think people virtually are constantly reacting. We don't have that transition time built in from, oh, I have to stand, like close my laptop, back up and leave the conference room to move to another physical space. We literally click leave one Zoom meeting and join another, but we need that transition time.
We do.
So similarly, like, can we take the moment to pause? Can we end a meeting 5 minutes early? So we have 5 minutes before our next meeting to get up, to move, to have that transition, to have that space. It's once again, can we have the space between the stimulus and the response? So we're not just reacting all day long, which leaves us exhausted with no opportunity to be creative. And so I think all of these things are just examples of learning from the virtual experience, in-person experience, learning about ourselves, what actually works well for us, what work, when and how do we do our best work? Mm-hmm. When and how do we need to involve other people? And how can we best match our style to the needs of our work and the circumstances of our environment and our organization?
Love that. I think that's a really great point to land on. Beautiful circle back to the very first piece. And this has been an absolutely amazing conversation with some really great insights and some shared values and things like that. And I look forward to hopefully having you back on again to talk more about these kinds of subjects, because I'm sure there's whole mountains that we can mine of information and insights that we can bring forward on this subject. This is really valuable, I think, in this current world. So thank you so much again for jumping on board with this and sharing some of your experience. It's been amazing.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, James. I've had a wonderful time. It's been a great conversation for me too. I learned a ton. I mean, this is where I would love to have another conversation in a few months to see where are we now, given, you know, moving back into a hybrid world, and like, what are people learning and how are things changing and
we're all learning.
What can we all learn from this? So thanks again. Really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. And happy St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you had your curiosity sparked to explore these subjects with greater awareness or gained a valuable insight along the way. Take a look at the show notes for links for where you can find more about Cal and Conversant. Leave reviews wherever you can and make sure to join the conversation on my Discord. Remember, community is the catalyst that drives lasting transformation. I'll see you in the next episode of Catalytic Curiosity.